Sanity for a change. The Rick Smith Show.
Back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind, you can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I got to tell you, I'm just the fact that, really, I mean, this health care bill is just horrible on every front, in my view. And the fact that you have the Republican leadership, you have the you have these politicians running around, no, it's great. And you have the people, their minions defending it. Just insane to me. Anyway, here to talk about this, that, the other thing, some of the, a new study out that says, you know what, thanks to Trump, we're all getting crazier. I've asked our good friend Propane Jane to come talk with us. Jane, thanks for taking time for us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me back.
So, you know, I look at this healthcare bill, and I listen to these pundits, I listen to these politicians, and I go, you know, How is it possible you can look someone straight in the eye and lie with this kind of ease and just flow? I mean, it's just amazing to me.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's atrocious. I often wonder if it's so alarming to me because I'm a physician, and I know it's not. But it's just so impossible for me to understand how they can say this stuff with a straight face and how they can just, you know, stand in the face of the reality and deny it, and leave, like, no options on the table for people who are genuinely going to suffer. I mean, it's a guarantee that this will be a disaster, and they have no regard or empathy for the people whose lives they are about to destroy, and they continue to try to pass it off like, you know, in Trump's words, it's going to be special, quote unquote. And, you know, I don't know if he means special in the sense of how inhumane it is, but it's just terrible. And I think right now, you know, it's just, you really have to question the humanity of this party right now to be putting this forward. And I think that they know how bad it looks because they're hiding from their constituents.
Yeah.
I mean, they're hiding the entire process because they know how rotten it is. They know how terrible it is. And they really are just trying to rush it through under cover of darkness and get it on the table so that they can get these tax cuts to their 1% buddies before we can do anything to save ourselves.
I mean, it's just amazing to me. And I asked that question on Friday. What exactly does he mean by special? And it's just crazy. But here's the thing. I mean, one of the things that's really grabbed my attention is how much I hear this rhetoric of, you know, of there's the deserving and then the undeserving. And it's, you know, those people who, you know, I've heard the crash your car analogy, the burn your house down analogy. It's all this you deserve what you get kind of thinking, which I got to be honest is really frightening.
Yeah, it's not just frightening. It is something that is a complete disavowal of science and fact. And again, you know, medical illness does not care whether you go to church every Sunday. It does not care whether you're rich, whether you're poor, whether you're a woman, a man, a Republican, a Democrat, whether you live in a red state, a blue state. It does not matter. Your DNA, you know, the environmental susceptibilities that we all have, it does not matter. You cannot put yourself in some expert, perfect position to evade medical illness. That's just not something that we have been able to accomplish as a species. And so the idea that somehow, you know, some people, you know, just deserve certain things when it comes to healthcare and that other people deserve less, it flies in the face of just reality. And I think it is also very ignorant, because even if you work a good job, even if you have employer-based health care, even if you've sort of done all of the right things that they say you're supposed to do, you can still go bankrupt. You're still one medical illness away from losing everything you have. And, you know, this has been documented over and over and over again. And so no one is safe. No one is safe from medical bills. And I think that part of the biggest issue is that there is no transparency in healthcare costs. And so people are under this kind of, you know, fantasy and delusion that the health insurance they have is going to cover them no matter what happens to them. In all circumstances, there will be no cap. They'll get the best of the best because they worked hard for it. And that's just not true. You know, in a lot of cases, even private insurance that people pay very high premiums for is limited, and they still have to come out of pocket tremendous amounts of money to pay for the healthcare services that they get. And so that's the part of the discussion that no one is talking about here. And they're making it very easy to blame people who are poor or who are reliant upon the public healthcare system, as if the changes that they are trying to make don't also affect people who have private insurance and you know, those benefits as well. And so again, they're just trying to, I think, put people into certain baskets so that it's easier to treat them very poorly.
Yeah, I mean, I told the story at the beginning of a guy we met while doing one of our food drives who had worked his entire life, mm-hmm. was actually a conservative, never asked for anything, never took anything, but had a heart attack.
Yeah.
Ended up losing his
right.
job, ended up losing his health care.
Right.
But at the end of the story, he ends up homeless and mm-hmm. using health care in the most expensive, inefficient way possible through the emergency mm-hmm. room, because he doesn't have a car. He doesn't have a house. He's going from shelter mm-hmm. to shelter. There isn't the continuity of care you would hope for. And he ends up dying a couple of months later. But, you know, this mm-hmm. this could happen to any of us.
Absolutely. You are describing so many of my patients. One of the reasons why I chose so long ago, back in medical school, to work in public health and to work with the underserved is because we all can be the underserved. And you know, with our labor rights being so thin and limited now, even that employer-based insurance is not really something that's a guarantee, because again, if you get sick, in our country, we don't really have, you know, very liberal, sick leave policies. So if you do have an illness that puts you up, you know, and you have to recuperate, you know, just for medical reasons for 6 to 8 weeks or 3 months, you know, a lot of these employers are going to fire you. And so now you have no coverage. And you still, in order to survive, have to get care. And because of the way our system is set up, if you walk into the emergency room having a heart attack, they're not going to just let you die on the street. I mean, we've at least decided that we don't do that. So we are going to care for you. And we are going to let you, for now, exactly. Yeah. And we are going to let you rack up a $500,000 medical bill, you know, in order to save your life. Because that's what, as doctors, that's what we're trained to do. I mean, this is the part that people are forgetting, is that when you walk into a hospital, we are still working under the Hippocratic Oath, and we are still trying to save lives every day. The nurses, the doctors, the social workers, everybody that's out there trying to help these people, we're still going to help them, and we're still going to bill for that. And ultimately, if that individual is not able to pay for that service, then that's an uncompensated, you know, bill for the healthcare industry, for the hospitals, for that get basically put on to the taxpayers. And so ultimately, we are all still paying for it, like you said. But again, we are paying for it in the most expensive, inefficient way that's not actually improving our health outcomes. We are still, you know, compared to the rest of the industrialized world, our healthcare is some of the worst out there. And so people can sort of pump out their chest as much as they want to. But again, the facts on the paper are that this is very inhumane what we're doing in America. And it doesn't make any sense. And it's tied to this profit margin and also tied to a preference for the 1% to stockpile as much money as they can. Again, we're still not being told what they need the money for and why that's more important than securing, you know, the general welfare. But this is the policy that they're putting forward, and people are going to die. I can't stress that part of it enough, because, you know, even a few weeks, for some people, a few days without coverage is enough to put them in a dire situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's scary, scary stuff. And at the end of it, none of us are immune. And the weird thing is, I talk to so many people who think, well, you know, I have this employer-based healthcare and I'm going to be fine. And we have this kind of illusion that, you know, we couldn't be that guy that I met. Unfortunately, most of us are not. But unfortunately, some of us will be.
Yeah, I mean, even if you think about something as basic as prescription coverage, and how much just pharmaceuticals cost these days, and someone who does actually have health insurance, as a physician, one of the biggest things that I run into in my ambulatory setting in my outpatient clinic is the insurance company just flat out telling me, no, we're not going to pay for that medication. And so then now I'm faced with having to put my patient on a medication that I didn't necessarily want to put them on, maybe because they might have side effects or it's contraindicated with some other condition that they have. But now I'm making a decision for their care that's based on their ability to pay for, their treatment. There are some people who, yes, they may not be in the hospital, but they are literally going broke on trying to just take their medicine every day. And we don't think about when you look at your paycheck and you start adding up, okay, now in some of these states with these premiums going up, some of these people, at least 50% of their income is going to have to go to a healthcare premium.
Yep.
And we haven't even talked about them paying their rent, putting food on their table, putting their kids through school. We haven't talked about any of this stuff. We're just talking about being able to wake up, breathe air, have a beating heart, have legs and arms that work, and be able to go around and do what we need to do free of interference from, morbidity. I don't know how this is something that is able to be miscommunicated and obfuscated so efficiently when it's something that affects all of us. That's the part that I just have such a difficult time understanding, because no matter who we are over the course of our lifespan, we have to come in contact with the healthcare industry in some way, you know, or someone in our family does.
Yeah, I got to be honest, I'm not looking forward to it, but you're absolutely right. But, you know, it leads me to this next thought, though. Because, you know, I just saw this this report out that there's a study, you know, out that says, you know what, you know, Trump's making us sick. Evidently, yeah. There's been something published in the New England Journal of Medicine that looks at, you know, this growing body of research on how these big political events, be it 9/11, you know, be it, you know,
right.
You know, World War II, whatever, or Trump being elected, changes our thinking and, you know, emboldens certain behavior. And, you know, I guess it's another one of these things where we already know this. There's that common sense component to where if you've got somebody who's running as a racist, all the racists are going to feel like, hey, let's get on the bandwagon. But literally, I mean, all of this stuff, I mean, all of this hatred, all of this mean-spiritedness, all of this first kind of
death care, death panel bill that they're trying to pass now are the people who voted for Trump. People who are in rural communities, people who belong to the white working class. The other studies that have come out that have been very alarming in recent years are that the life expectancy, in particular for white Americans, is decreasing, and that the rate of suicide and unintentional death by overdose on these prescription pills and self-inflicted gun violence, that there is a crisis going on within the very communities that are actually voting for more crisis. Again, that's the part that's so dangerous about it, because the very people who sort of need to be saved, I think, most eminently from these policies are the people who are voting for the policies. And so if you can't get them to see their own, you know, like self-preservation as more important than furthering, you know, this culture and this idea of, you know, make America great again, which is actually, you know, like an oxymoron at this point. That the scary part is that the stress of all of this is actually killing us. You know, I actually read an article that's very similar to what you're talking about, that was the title, that stress is literally killing us. And it is the anxiety, the stress over how am I going to make ends meet? How am I going to put food on the table? How am I going to pay for my medications? People who are in chronic pain, people who are now out in the streets trying to buy heroin, so that they can, you know, feed their opiate dependence. And this is what's happening in the heart of GOP values. And unfortunately, those representatives who are supposed to be helping these people are acting like none of this is even happening, and that you can just do, you know, whatever they say do, and everything's just going to be great and it's going to just be fine.
And I would argue not just that it's not happening, that they just don't care. That, I mean,
right, exactly.
Even in the rhetoric, you know, that, you know, there's the deserving and the undeserving, and, you know, in the dehumanization of people who have addiction problems or uh-huh. people who were born into poverty. It just seems to be this mean-spiritedness that it's just gripped us as a country.
Like Kellyanne Conway said yesterday, you know, that, you know, it's
everyone
okay
gets health insurance, like you and I do, Jane. Everyone gets health insurance. Just go get a job. It's that simple.
Yeah, everybody can just go get a job. I mean, but hello, I mean, where is all these jobs? And again, why are we assuming that every job there is in America offers health insurance? Why are we assuming that the very first day that you sign on to that job that you have automatic health insurance? Why are we acting like there typically isn't a 90-day waiting period, or in some cases, you know, some people have to wait 9 months to a year before they get coverage?
Yep. And what about the pre-existing conditions that, you know, I've heard people say, you know, I got a job, but the insurance doesn't cover, you know, this or that. Now, again, this was pre-Obamacare, and I think it's easy to forget just how bad it was before. Look, I wasn't a huge fan of the Affordable Care Act. It should have gone much farther, public option minimum. But, you know, people forget 55 million uninsured, pre-existing conditions, rescission. You go down the list, caps. You go down the list of all this stuff. I think we've as a nation, we've got a serious case of amnesia.
Yeah, oh, for sure. We've got amnesia, and we also, you know, there's sort of this apathy that comes from, like, a disbelief that they could really do this. Like, they can't really do that. No, they really can do that. You know, during the election, there were a lot of people, you know, the media was sort of, you know, to some degree picking up on, like, the hypocrisy of, like, for instance, senior citizens that were voting GOP, even though they were saying that they were wanting to cut Medicare and wanting to cut Social Security. And those people would say, well, they're not really going to do that. And I don't know what it is about those people that they don't want to believe literally what the guys are actually saying to them in their face every day.
Yeah.
And
always wanted. I mean, you look at Medicaid. I mean, to be honest, they never wanted Medicaid, and they've been working or Medicare, and they've been working to destroy it all along. So when they get the opportunity, are you surprised that they take it? And to highlight what you just said, on election day, I was handing out literature for a friend, and I actually talked to a guy who was on a breathing machine. He had one of those portable oxygen masks and all this.
Yeah.
And he was in his late 50s, early 60s, and I said, who pays for that? He goes, he gets it through Medicaid. And I go, are you kidding me? Please give me your email address. Give me your contact information. Give me something. And I had this conversation. Please. So when they destroy it and they literally take the air out of your nose and you can't breathe, I want to be standing there to say, I told you so.
Yeah. But see, he's under the illusion that it's just going to affect those people, quote unquote. And so again, they are able to do this bait and switch and convince these people to vote for these cuts and to vote for this really draconian agenda because they are still believing that they are going to still be, you know, the best treated hostages at the robbery. And again, I don't know why these people don't seem to grasp the fact that the same welfare that they're wanting to be cut, that they actually are on that welfare, the Social Security, the Medicaid, the Medicare, all of that. Yes, they paid into it. Yes, it's taxes, and you earned it. But how can it be something that you earned because of what you did? But then for the other people, it's an entitlement and it's a handout and they don't really deserve it. So again, this is very much, you know, what we call the narcissism of minor differences, and that people are sort of able to see themselves as more deserving, or somehow going to be saved or, you know, immune to the worst of what happened. But unfortunately, they're just kind of lying to themselves.
Yeah, it's scary stuff. Last question that I've got for you then, because, you know, I mean, I'm looking at where we're heading and, you know, all of this, this anger, all of this stress, all of this tension, and it's every day and it's building and it's getting worse, you know, be it, you know, the Russia stuff, be it the, you know, the healthcare stuff, be it the coming tax cuts and the budget tax cuts that are coming, all of this. What do we do? How do we fend this off?
I think, you know, Nancy Pelosi said it best that we have to keep telling our stories and we have to keep, you know, making ourselves seen. I was really moved by the disabled protesters that were at Mitch McConnell's office.
Yeah, the ADAPT people.
Absolutely, last week. And I think as much as we can draw from them and see that, you know, even with all of the obstacles that they assuredly had to face to even get up to the, you know, Capitol and get into that office and do what they did, their lives are on the line and they are behaving as such. And they're going and they're talking to their representatives and they are not allowing themselves to be ignored. And I think that story is going to be something that is always tied to Trump care. No matter what happens, just the indignity and the inhumanity of, you know, wheeling people out, dragging people out, pulling them out of their wheelchairs, handcuffing them in their wheelchairs, for simply just trying to survive, for simply just trying to tell their story of, this is what's going to happen to me. My freedom, my life, my quality of life is in jeopardy. My health is in jeopardy. Simply because of these callous actions that you don't have to take.
Yep.
This is something you don't have to do. And you're doing it anyway, despite this mounting opposition. And I think the more and more that we can continue to follow their example, and to be brave and to be courageous and continue to tell our stories, because the reality is there. You know, as a physician, I know that the reality is there. You know, I work in one of the most uninsured counties in America, and I see it every time I go to work. I cannot escape it. It's not something that will ever go away in my daily life. And so as much as I see it, I talk about it. And so that's what I would just encourage people to do. Is just to find people who can support you and who can share your message and be advocates for each other. Because they're not looking out for us. We have to look out for ourselves.
Absolutely. Jane, I appreciate the time. Great talk with you. Thanks so much.
All right. You have a great week. Thank you.
You as well. Always great to talk with our good friend Propane Jane. Share your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We're on the road to nowhere.
Thought back to America. Rick Smith.